Hello, everyone. The show must be paused. You've probably seen this hashtag from your favourite artist, entertainer, or sportsperson this week, highlighting widespread issues of racism in the United States. Here at the 9-8 podcast, being two white men here in Australia, Black Lives Matter, but we have no place commenting on these issues ourselves. However, it'd be remiss of us to not use our small corner of the internet here to direct our listeners to some people of colour who are sharing their experiences. In our show notes, you'll find an excellent playlist curated by John Green, speaking to these issues, and you'll find a Google Doc curated by Sarah Veet, listing organisations, resources, and ways you can help. And now, on with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is David Ellis, and joining me, as per usual, is the wonderful man for the Western Coast, Mr. Alex Hogg. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. It's been a very long and very trying week.
For anyone in the media space, it has been... Actually, scratch that. Anyone on Facebook, it has been, been a hell of a week. It's been trying.
Yes. We're not going to, obviously, you heard the intro at the start there. We're not going to comment directly on those issues today because neither of us feel particularly comfortable talking about that specifically. We are going to talk about the music industry's response to that, but we'll get to that a bit later. First off, we'll jump into some follow-up. And you've got a piece of follow-up here.
I was about to say, even before the follow-up, because it's not really following up on anything, but I've been saying for a while now that I'm trying my hardest to get a good friend of mine, Dan Finari, who some of you may know is the drummer from Polaris, on the show. He's finally agreed to do an interview with me over the next couple of weeks sometime and so on and so forth. Probably going to go around to his place and have a beer and have a chat. But he listened to our interview that I did with Harry Myrie from the US, and he was like, it was a really cool interview, man. I really loved it. I'd love to meet the guy. Just one question. Why isn't your theme in 9-8?
Finally, 60-something odd episodes in, someone's finally figured it out. I don't think we've actually addressed this on the show directly, but the theme song to this show is something that you actually wrote, Dave. I said to you, we need a theme show for this song. You are a guitar player. You come up with something. And I greenlighted the thing that you came up with because I thought it sounded pretty cool. Yeah. And I wondered how long it was going to take until someone figured out that it wasn't actually in 9-8.
Or there we go. Possibly before someone mentioned it. I'm sure that there's prog listeners out there who are just going, actually, you know what? If you're a true prog listener, you're probably listening to that going, my God, what time signature is that? I've never heard that. It's 4-4, guys. Yeah. But Dan said, I'd love to record a new one with you in 9-8. So we'll see what happens there. No promises from his end or my end, but definitely something in the works. Check that one out because that one will be coming up in the next couple of weeks sometime. We'll be releasing that. Now, follow up this week. We've got so much to talk about. Something about Danish churchgoers with drive-in gigs?
Yeah, this is following on from what you were saying about drive-in gigs in the Scandinavian countries. Apparently, there is a Danish church that has gotten in on the drive-in gigs. They're doing drive-in sermons. Obviously, people can't sort of congregate in a church to pray and do the things that people do in churches. So they've been doing it out in an open space that was previously used for a Danish heavy metal festival called Copenhell. They've turned it in and calling it Copenheaven. Just to kind of put a spin on that one. And apparently,
which kind of actually works better than Copenhell.
Yes, it does.
Because it's the same syllable. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Instead of saying amen, though, we were talking before about, you know, how do people cheer? Do they flash their headlights or whatever? Instead of saying amen, they all just blare their horns simultaneously as a way of saying amen. So it's a rather good one, I thought. An interesting one. I mean, we are blessed to have a lot of people who listen to us in America. And I know a lot of people in America, the COVID-19 has directly affected America worse than anywhere else in the world. So maybe this is something that if your congregation is looking for a different way to kind of have a sermon or have people gathering to pray or something, maybe this is something that you can look at in your area. We'll throw a link in the show notes to an article in the New York Times where they go into much more detail than we possibly could hear about that. But if that's something that your congregation or your people are looking into, then maybe that's a way to go.
Absolutely.
Moving on from that, we had another piece of follow-up from dear friend of the show, Joshua Batten. This is a lobby group for Live Performance Australia. They're calling on the Australian government for a $90 million business reactivation plan, specifically aiming towards capital investments to restart touring and productions. The business plan is a whole long business plan. It's many, many pages long. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. Two things about this. One, this is a brilliant idea, and two, it'll never happen. Not while this government's in charge anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
This government has shown, I mean, we're not going to go too much into the politics here, because I know people don't like us talking about politics, but this government has shown repeatedly, time after time, year after year, that they do not care about the arts in this country.
Yep. There is no other way to sort of talk about that really without sort of wanting to cry. There is no way that it's going to happen. But it is an absolutely fantastic idea because, I mean, restarting touring and productions and things like that is what obviously this industry needs to get back on its feet. And
what can't be undersold as well is the amount of money that it brings in. I mean, the arts industry in dollars going in puts out more dollars in terms of secondary income for pubs, clubs, hotels, and other associated industries, does more for this country than sport does.
Yep.
And in Australia, that is a big move because the sport, I don't think there's anywhere I've been in the world that cares more about sport than this country. Routinely devoting like half their news bulletins to sport. Whole back sections of newspapers and websites are dedicated to sport. And for the arts in this country, which is a country that has long not really particularly cared about the arts all that much, to still put out more money per capita, per dollar in, than sport does, that's insane.
Absolutely. It is insane. It's something that would be really, really nice to sort of see get up. So jump on that link, have a bit of a look, because it's something that's definitely worth supporting. And you never know, if we make enough noise, maybe something will happen. Now, Hoggy, we've spoken on the show before about Blackwire Records, little independent music store in Sydney that used to host great gigs and was pushed out by a combination of unfriendly local councils and very annoying neighbours who just whinge about everything because they can. And there's one in Melbourne that's facing similar challenges and have actually started selling stuff online. Have you seen this one?
Yeah. This is another one, actually, that came in from Joshua. He was talking about this is a record store. This is Basement Discs in Melbourne. Now, obviously, they're in a part of Melbourne that is very dependent on, like, foot traffic, and obviously that's not happening so much. It's sort of within an area that's been very heavily restricted and where people can go. So they've had to kind of, to try and stay in business, they've pivoted to selling records online, and they will ship the records anywhere in the world, and they've got some great stuff in there. So, you know, very, very supportive of the independent music scene, particularly in Melbourne, which is where a lot of the great stuff is happening these days here in this country. So we'll throw a link in the show notes to an interview that someone has done with them, and we'll throw a link in the show notes to their website so you can go there and have a look at what's going on there. One last piece of follow-up. This is for you, Dave. How's that personal shopper remix of yours coming on?
Look, I was doing it, and it just fell by the wayside. I was so busy this week, I didn't get the opportunity to do it. So unfortunately, I missed the deadline.
Oh no!
To submit it, and unfortunately, because of how the competition rules were set up, I can't actually share it with anyone either.
You could put a link up on a free SoundCloud.
No, you can't. You can only upload it to their SoundCloud.
Oh, their SoundCloud. Oh,
yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. And then it's a private thing and you can't use it. It's in the T's and C's. But I had some really cool ideas for it in that it was so much more ambient, and that the actual Elton John speaky bit was really, really cool because I used that sort of as the intro. With like a pad underneath it. So everyone who's a muso now needs to close your eyes and you need to sort of think of it. You know, it's got him speaking and then it sort of becomes more and more sort of frantic and then it drops into Stephen singing. The fundamental problem with this particular song, though, is that there's like, four paragraphs of words.
Yeah.
So it makes it really, really hard. But it was interesting going through the song as well and actually figuring out what was in there. It's actually a reasonably well put together song from once you pair it back. I think the problem was it was this disco stupid shit that no one cares about. And if you're a prog god kind of thing like what Wilson is, and then you put out something that sounds like it probably should have been released by Earth, Wind and Fire, you're probably going to have a bad time.
I'm actually curious to see
the rest of the remixes, frankly.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the criticism he's copped over this song is kind of an extension of the criticism he copped over the last one, Permanating, which just sounded like a really bad album, just sounded like, you know, an ABBA song they never wrote.
So I think that's about it for follow-up, right? So
yes,
on to the news, I think.
So I recorded the piece that was at the top of this show a few days ago. It was something that I was thinking about and wrote down because I knew we had to address it on the show. Since I recorded that piece, however, many artists have decided to donate revenue shares from their sales towards various organizations committed to the wider Black Lives Matter movement. We're going to talk about some of those here now. Artist Catharsis, as we're recording, this is happening now and will be happening for a few more days after we're recording this, are donating their revenue share to Indigenous Australian NGOs, which is they haven't decided as we're recording now which one that will be, but I'm sure they'll decide sooner rather than later and make a post about that. Friend of the show, Mike Mills, donated all of the money that he was receiving for the 24-hour Bandcamp sale. Is going to an organization called Children's Ground. They're an organization that works towards creating a better future for First Nation Australians. And there was a slightly different take on this. Now, we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about this because this is still ongoing. This is said to be from my wife. This is an organization called Enemies List Home Recordings. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to their Facebook post. But the short version of this is this. If you can show them by a screenshot in the comments that you've recently donated to a Black Lives Matter cause, either one in America or one that's happening locally in your area, they'll send you an as yet unreleased but upcoming material from Black Wing and the Flowers of St. Francis as a thank you.
That's pretty cool.
So if you have donated to the cause and you would like to hear some different sounding music, follow the link in the show notes to that particular post. Put a screenshot in there. Obviously, you can redact if you know, most of the banking apps, that at least the one that I use, if you do take a screenshot, it will redact your personal banking details and your name as well if you have a different name on Facebook. And you know, redact that, put that on there, and then they'll send that to you, which I think is a really good cause, actually, if you like someone who they want to show solidarity with the cause there.
Absolutely. I think it'd be really interesting to hear the unreleased material personally. So if you do that and you get some of that material, let us know what the material is like. We don't want to hear it ourselves. I mean, unless I'll probably donate actually and get something anyway.
I'll probably find some money from somewhere and donate to it.
And we'd love to hear how it is that you're actually helping out the cause, if indeed you are. Send us a tweet, send us an email. We'd love to know.
Absolutely. Now, following on from that, there was a whole series of news items that came out of Dream. So we're just going to call this section like Dream Theater News because there's quite a few of them happening. The first one, something that just sort of came out of nowhere, John Petrucci posted up on the social media channels that he has a new project in the works. Now, we're kind of guessing this is a solo album, but we're not sure, really. It's got the title of Terminal Velocity.
I was going to say, his first one was called Suspended Animation, and then the next one, likely, if the rumor mill is right, is Terminal Velocity. Kind of nice play on there, and obviously, I mean, maybe this was recorded during or written during the time that the Velocity album was being written as well, so you never know.
Well, distance over time, terminal velocity,
You never know. You never know. Apparently, it's going to be out sometime in autumn if you're the fall, if you're in the northern hemisphere. If you're in the southern hemisphere like us, that'll be spring. And it sounds awesome. Now, something I did pick up from the very short little video that he did, there is just one hit of a drum. It's a crash cymbal and a kick hit together with this big, awesome, you know, build-up-y thing. Go and check out the video. We'll put a link in the show notes. I could be wrong, but that sounds like Portnoy to me.
That's a big claim. Hit. That's a big claim there, Dave. Why do you say that? What is it about the? Because I didn't really notice that closely. So, what is it about that you think it's about that? It's a Mike Portnoy drumming.
It just sounds like him. It sounds like a typical. I don't have a drum kit in front of me, and air drum doesn't make any sound. But you know, it sounds like one of those typical kick and cymbal choke things that he did, and it just it sounds like him. Maybe it's someone who's just able to emulate him. I don't know. Maybe it's like the Eric Gillette version of Mike Portnoy for John Petrucci. You know,
there's so many guitar players out there who have picked up on the John Petrucci sound and sort of use that. You think this is like the Mike Portnoy drum sound?
Yeah, look, it very well could be, or it could be Mike himself. But to me, possibly. It sounds like Mike.
I don't know if it was
because I know that he and Mike are still quite close. So,
yes.
And I know that he played with, he didn't actually play on Suspended Animation, but he did the live stuff with him.
Yeah, so with those G3 tours.
G3 and all that sort of stuff. Mm. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I think it'll be really interesting to see.
I don't know. It would have been a bit more of a dead giveaway if the particular clip he had to include included octobuns. I think that would have just, you know, nailed it down. So if you've got the octobuns in that, right, that's got to be him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know anybody else who uses those things aside from Mike Mangini when he's replicating Mike Portnoy's drum parts.
Well, yeah.
Like, I don't know anybody else who uses those drums.
Well, Kerry does.
Oh, does he?
Danny Carey, yeah, and so does, Neil Peart.
These would have been electronic ones, I think, when he was creating that sound, yeah, because he had the whole electronic kit thing happening. Now, speaking of John and Mike being particularly good friends, there was another one of these cameo posts that did the rounds on the internet where someone directly asked Jordan Rudess if there was going to be a Liquid Tension Experiment reunion happening. And he rather candidly admitted that, yes, they were all looking at their calendars, trying to figure out how and when they could all get into a room and jam out some sort of Liquid Tension Experiment recording, which set the internet ablaze with comments and ideas and opinions about that. I don't think it's any great secret, as we sort of discussed in last fortnight's after show, that there are some members of Dream Theater who are not necessarily friends with Mike Portnoy anymore, and then there are some who are. So John and Mike are still friends. They've been sort of, you know, the pictures tweeted out on Instagram and stuff. Jordan and Mike have played together on stage since Mike left Dream Theater, so they're all still kind of friendly with each other. The interesting part, do you think that this Liquid Tension Experiment recording will actually happen? Or is it just sort of teasing the fans a bit?
So I hope so, but I also hope it doesn't.
Why is that?
Because
in case it turns out to be shit.
No, not at all. It won't turn out to be shit because Liquid Tension Experiment, and I've said this for a while, I think, you know, the three of those guys get together, Portnoy and John and Jordan get together, music's going to be made. It's going to be awesome, right? So it doesn't, I'm not worried about that. What I am worried about is them taking time out of the time that they're supposed to be here touring to do that.
I see where you're going with this.
It's a completely selfish reason, but I do not want to miss out on that Scenes from a Memory World tour. We're already skating on thinner than a piece of paper, so far as I'm concerned. You know, purely selfish reasons, I hope it doesn't. But likewise, I hope it does as well. So I'm caught between a bit of a rock and a hard place. But either which way.
I see what you mean, is if they take the time out to do. But the thing is with the Liquid Tension Experiment, I'm pretty sure they recorded, like, those records within a week. because it's all like jamming anyway. Most of it was anyway.
Mm, possibly.
It's all like jamming. So it wouldn't take necessarily all that long to kind of do a thing, to do that sort of thing, because it's very much a jam band. The thing, and this is why they're saying, oh, we need to find time in everybody's schedule to do it, because this isn't the sort of thing you could just write by the mail. Like Neil Morse has written a lot of his records, a lot of it's done like by the mail.
Mm,
and the Levin, Miniman, Rudess albums were also written by the mail. So you couldn't do this one like that. Although it'd be interesting to see them try and do it over Zoom. I don't know. There's been some sort of discussions lately doing rounds on the internet on whether or not anyone can actually do any decent recordings over Zoom. It might be fine to kind of have conversations with people, but whether or not it actually works when you're trying to write music together
too
is
much
another.
Delay.
Yeah?
Way too much delay.
For Zoom, though? I know it's a problem with Skype. Because lag is just... It is for Zoom as well? Okay.
Yeah, just too much delay.
Yeah,
you just can't do it. You've got to remember as well, when you're talking about recording music, right, you can be 4 or 5 milliseconds off and you'll hear it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it doesn't really need to be a huge thing. Anyway, Liquid Tension Experiment, potentially reuniting. Final bit of Dream Theater news. You get to design your own Dream Theater shirt.
Well, hey.
I've actually got a really good idea for this one.
Don't hold back. Share it with the class.
All right. So my theory is to have like a Dream Theater logo on the front and then on the, Dream Theater logo on the front, and then on the back have a conversation of a Dream Theater person telling a non-Dream Theater fan about Dream Theater.
Okay. How would that conversation go, do you think? Because I've had this conversation quite a few times and it tends to go different every time.
It would have to be something like, what, you've never heard of Dream Theater, the greatest band ever? Are you serious? They're just like five amazing musos that started, and you'd have to go through the whole thing, and it would have to be done quite stylistically, everything. And then at the end, it would have to be .. and you're not listening, are you? Like, it would have to be something like that.
Okay.
That would actually be really funny.
The way that this contest works is you create your own t-shirt design and then submit it to a WeTransfer link, which we will put a link to that in the show notes. Then the band are going to pick a top three, and then the fans are going to pick a winner.
Mm.
I'd much prefer the contest if it was the other way around. Fans pick a top three, band picks the winner, but whatever.
Yeah, that would seem
to
make more sense.
And then that design will be made available on the Dream Theater shop for a limited time only. And the winning artist gets a $250 Dream Theater store gift card.
If Salty hasn't seen this...
Ooh, that's a really good... I'm going to tag him in that now.
Yeah, he needs to see this.
Right, where are you, Salty? Hang on. Andrew, right, done. I had to do it. A Salty designed Dream Theater T-shirt.
Oh mate, I'd be all over that.
That's a really good point.
I'd be all over that. Seriously, that'd be so good.
And if the band don't pick his design, if he submits one, and the band don't pick it, they fail. They fail so hard. The other band, actually, now that we're talking about Dream Theater, now we're talking about t-shirt designs, the one band that I am going to call out that does really, really average t-shirt designs, I'm looking at you, Marillion, their t-shirt designs have been crap for years. Yeah, and I would love to see the fans have a stab at trying to do that.
At doing crappy designs or?
Oh, no, doing better ones than them.
Right. So you get to design your own Dream Theater shirt. We'll put the links in the show note where you can see the competition and enter and all that sort of stuff. And we'd love to see your designs. So let us know. Tweet at us your designs at 98FM. Now, there's been a whole swathe of new music that's come out as well over the last little while. Holy shit, there's been a lot of music.
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot. Today, for brevity reasons, we're going to talk about mostly the Australian artists that have released new music that has come to our attention. Mm-hmm. But first, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a list of songs that have been curated by NPR, which they've sort of titled as like the new songs of protest and hope.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're like me, who decided on a whim one night to re-listen to NWA's Fuck the Police, these songs might be of interest for you to listen to. If you want to listen to that, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to it. There's a list of, I think, 30 or 40 songs in there, and the list keeps growing as well. The more songs they find, the more songs they're going to keep putting in there. So I'm going to put a link in the show notes to that.
And I do want to just do a little bit of sort of a shout back as well to the boys in Caligula's Horse. Since this whole BLM thing has kicked off as well, I think their album has taken on an even more prophetic kind of view of things.
Yep.
So if you guys are listening, I just want to let you all know that I think you're all witches and you can clearly see the future. and I will be borrowing your crystal ball at some time because I got to make some money somehow.
There was also, just on that as well, you've made me think of the Anubis record, Homeless, which was that sort of that. There's some things in that record there, and I'm like, ooh, that's remarkably prophetic as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though they weren't talking about like bushfires and stuff, the bushfires and other sort of political issues going on, there's definitely some things in there that are like, ooh, yeah. So there's that. Devin Townsend also shared an hour of ambient music for free on his YouTube channel. Now, this ambient music that he's been creating, he says that 80-some-odd percent of the music that he sort of writes when he sits down to write is this kind of music. Everybody sort of thinks of him as like the same metalhead guy when he was in his 20s and Strapping Young Lad, which is mostly not true anymore. I mean, he still does that style of music, but he says more of it, more sort of ambient stuff. So this ambient
music,
it's
fantastic if you haven't heard it, by the way.
It is. It's really, really good. Now, this ambient music has mostly been backing up his podcast. It's sort of playing underneath him in the background. So that music, and people have been asking him, oh, you know, you should release more of that stuff. So he did a whole, this is improvised, one take. Apparently there's a little spot where he edited out where he had to go and stop and go to the bathroom. But it's basically one take all the way through him doing ambient guitar music. It's really, really good. In contrast to, if you want to listen to, you know, songs about, you know, the protesting and things like that, there's that. If you need a break from all that sort of stuff, and by Christ, if I needed one of those this week, that's there for you as well. There's something to listen to that would be really, really good.
Absolutely. Good music to put on over a dinner too. It's very, very interesting.
Absolutely.
Now, former guests on the show, Tangle Thoughts of Leaving, they've released a live studio recording called Dread Sessions Volume 1. Now, these guys love to jam on and experiment live within a studio setting of the studio versions of their songs. And so now they've released a selection of these as a digital release. You can check that out on their Bandcamp. We'll put the link to that on the show notes, in the show notes below. Now, Hoggy, you've seen these guys live.
Yes,
I think
I have seen
any other band that you've seen live,
yes,
if I remember correctly.
I think I've seen them something like 24 times live or something. There was a phase in my life where I didn't miss a show of theirs for 2 years.
So
whatever they were playing. So
are these kind of like the live versions, like the live extended versions of
pretty
the stuff
much,
that they do?
Pretty much, yeah. There's a lot of improvisation, experimentation. So there's one song on there, on this Dread Sessions Volume 1 called Deep Rivers Run Quiet, which is my favourite Tangle Thoughts of Leaving song to listen to and one of my favourites to see them perform live. Mm-hmm. It's a very different beast performed live than it is when they did that studio recording back in 2011. It's much heavier. There's a lot more heavy metal sort of elements to it. It was definitely, I think it's sort of inspired by Philip Glass because it's got that sort of ostinato sort of pattern minimalist thing that Philip Glass liked to do. Mm-hmm. But they've taken that and they've developed it even further. And it's also significantly longer. I think the studio version is 11 and a half minutes. This one runs to nearly 15 minutes.
Awesome.
If you're into that sort of thing and you like listening to bands reapproaching their songs live and doing sort of interesting extended jam thing, have a listen to this. It's really, really good. It's really, really good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well worth a listen to. I'm going to have to put that in my stuff to listen to.
Yes.
Which, by the way, in case anyone is taking notes at home, the new prog releases thing, which I've been curating, is now up to 183 hours and 54 minutes.
Good grief.
So
what, 183 hours? That's like almost
1,954 songs.
Yeah, I was just thinking, that's a whole week back to back, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
No, it's a bit. I think a week is 186 hours. No, I can't remember. I used to have this in my head.
25 times 7 minus 7.
20. Yeah. Whatever that turns out to be. Yeah, I think it's just about a whole week.
Well, 25 times 6, 150, 175. It's a little bit more than a week.
Okay, cool. Yep. Yeah, so that's just over a week back to back of new music, and we're not even halfway through the year yet.
Yeah, it's about a week and a half a day, I think, works out.
Good grief.
Yeah.
That is a lot of music.
It's pretty good. So anyone wants to sit there and tell me that there's been no music been released, go and listen to that because it'll...
Yeah,
exactly. You've got some stuff there to listen mm-hmm. to. We've spoken about the lead-off single for this record, and now the full album has been released. Ebon Ivory's The Long Dream Eye or The Long Dream One?
I think it's The Long Dream Eye.
Sure. Either which way. Have you had a chance to listen to this album? I'm going to have to say I haven't yet.
No, I haven't had a chance to. I have not had a chance to listen to the whole album, but that's okay because we can probably cover this record track by track all the way through on the next show.
Absolutely.
A little bit of foreshadowing for this episode, though. We said we were going to cover the Haken record track by track, but mm-hmm. for some reason or another, that record has been delayed again.
Yeah.
It is now being released on July the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to cover that when that record comes out. However, we will be covering the Frost record that we spoke about last week instead, track by track. We're going to cover that one this time around.
Absolutely.
So, but next time around, we will be covering Ebon Ivory's The Long Dream Eye in full, track by track.
Hoping it's a good album. Now, the other sort of big proggy Australian guys that released, well, there's a couple that have released some really cool stuff, but in the same vein, i.e. they're on the same record label, Glass Ocean, The Remnants of Losing Yourself in Someone Else, coming out on August the 21st, released the second single off that called Voyage. Now, have you listened to this one, Hoggy?
Yes, I did, actually. I listened to it just before we came on air. It's a really, really interesting song. This one, I'm definitely going to have to take another listen through to it again because it's a lot more lyrically driven than I was expecting.
Yeah,
that one line that keeps getting repeated over and over again, which I wrote down, which is, "It seems to me you'll never find the peace that you need." I mean, I think that really resonated with me, especially with all the things that are going on here in Australia and in the wider world at the moment as well. I think that's a really powerful line. And for them basically to loop that line at the end of the song in the fade out as well, I thought it was really, really powerful. So I'm definitely going to have another listen to it again to go back through and talk about the lyrics and think about what they... Because that's a really powerful statement I think I'm making. What about you, Dave? What do you think?
I think it's a really, really interesting track. I agree with you. I think it's one of those tracks that seem to be awfully prophetic, and there seem to be a few of those running around at the moment. I just really enjoyed it. I'm like you, though. I'm going to have another couple of listens to it, I think, to get my head around the lyrics and figure out exactly what's in there. Normally, I'm pretty good with it. The mixing was lovely as well. It seems to be quite well put together. I'm actually quite interested to hear the whole album and hear how it fits in to the whole album itself. So, yeah, looking forward to that on August 21st.
So that is there from Glass Ocean. We've got, there's a new song that has come out from Sleep Makes Waves, from a new song from their forthcoming third part to their EP trilogy, These Are Not Your Dreams. The new song is called Pyramids. Have you had a chance to listen to this one, Dave?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
This song is very much what I would expect from Sleep Makes Waves. Instrumental, big soundscapes, very sort of cinematic. And also it's an 8.5 minute long song, which is very, very much, very on brand for them. Big long songs, a lot more use of keys as well. There's some keyboard stuff in there, which is, there seems to be a direction they're moving more and more towards. The first two parts of this trilogy are out now. The third one is due out July 17th.
Excellent.
And you can do a pre-order now where you can purchase all three EPs on a CD, plus a myriad of versions. There's like four or five different packaged bundles you can get of these EPs on vinyl. Vinyls with T-shirts, vinyls with the back catalog on vinyl, a whole bunch of stuff there. So if you like Sleep Makes Waves and you're a big fan of their music, check this out and go and buy their stuff.
Absolutely.
Yes, we have one last piece of new music that we'd like to talk about. This one was actually sent to us by a fan through our email, which you can find a link to on our website. This is new music from a listener by Daniel Naski, I think. I'm sorry, Daniel, if I've got... I asked you how to pronounce the band's name, which is Maiora, but I didn't bother to ask you how to pronounce your name. I'm sorry about that. So this is from...
Rookie mistake, yes, mate.
I'm terrible. Him and a bandmate, Daniel Pinto. This, I listened, now he sent through a link, said, hey, check this out, see what you think. Now, I listened to the EP, which was released in 2019, called The Far and Few. Did you listen to this EP as well, Dave, or did you listen the other EP?
I listened to this one as well. I actually listened to, well, I saw that email come through, and generally, just so everyone knows, generally speaking, Hoggy is the guy that deals with the emails, because I've got a big enough job editing all the shit together and such, so he kind of deals with all the back end stuff.
Yes.
So I saw that email come through, shot Hoggy a message and was like, hey, check this email out and had to listen to all the music. It's interesting. I know that the guys are really young. So
yes.
I think you said they were like in year 12 or something like
that. Yeah, yeah. Well, at least one of the band members is still in high school.
Yeah.
Which, so, I mean, yeah. It's
given,
very young.
Taking that into consideration,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty good.
Oh yeah.
It's very good. It sounds a little, for my taste, a little stale, but I think that's because I'm comparing him to the likes of Animals as Leaders, Pliny, I Built the Sky,
yes.
etc. All of which have 10 or 15 years on this guy.
Or more.
Right? So for him to be sort of mentioned within the same crew as that, given that he's what, year 12, so 17, 18, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big thing, I think.
Yeah, so this style of music, if you are a fan of, as we've mentioned here, I Built the Sky, Animals as Leaders, Pliny, James Norbert Ivani, that sort of style of instrumental, prog, rock, stroke metal, check this out.
Yeah. Tell you what it kind of reminded me of. It kind of reminded me of what the Omnific is, but instead of two bass players, two guitarists.
Okay.
That's kind of the thing that it reminded me of.
Okay.
Which I prefer just because I'm a guitarist. So,
yes.
You know.
The one thing I was going to call out as well is the guitar tone. Now, we've seen it in this genre where there's a whole bunch of guitar players out there who've been listening to John Petrucci and have kind of copied his guitar tone and then written their own music with that. Here we have a guitar player who does not sound like John Petrucci, which is very impressive in this genre.
His sound, it doesn't sound like John Petrucci. He's definitely got that far more modern kind of thing going on, in the veins of the people that we mentioned before.
Yes.
You know, very much about the clean articulation of the notes and things like that. I'd actually be really interested to find out what he uses. I know, I think from one of the photos, I think I saw a Mionis on there, I think, maybe.
This
I'm
is where
sure.
I thought it would be interesting to have him on the show to talk about one of two topics. You guys talking about guitar gear, which when you did that with Ro was a really interesting chat, even though I'm no guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it'd be interesting to see the perspective of the Sydney music scene. I mean, we, as you know, as several years older than these guys, have a rather dismissive attitude towards the Sydney music scene that's basically dying on its ass.
Yes.
Be interesting to see what the next generation of musicians in Sydney coming through think about the scene, whether they're a little bit more optimistic about it or whether us being rather sniffy about it has kind of stamped on that a bit.
Yeah, well, it would be interesting to see that. Maybe that's definitely a show that we can do in the not too distant future. So definitely go and check those guys out, because I think they're ones to watch.
Totally.
I don't think they're exactly there right at the moment, but I think they're ones to watch.
But given that this is, the only stuff that is available on their Bandcamp or on their Spotify was all released last year, and it's basically two EPs.
Well, that's one of the things I did actually notice was the fact that they'd released two EPs and a single. And that's kind of how it was always done.
Yes.
Right? It was, you know, you'd release a couple of EPs, you'd tour around for a little bit on the back of those, and then by the time you'd released a few EPs and a couple of singles and you'd had a couple of tours and stuff like that, then it was time to write an album, and that might be your fifth release. So it's interesting to see these guys sort of almost going back to basics.
Well, it's also as well sort of a...
At least on current trajectory.
I guess so. But also as well, I think with the way that, if you've got songs, just put it out there. I mean, also as well, I'm not sure if you saw, but on the back end, this was mixed and mastered by Forrester Saville.
Yes.
So you know, and we know you more than me, but we know that Forrester doesn't mix anything that he doesn't think is any good. He's not in a position. Well, he's definitely not in the position where he has to kind of take on anything that anyone sends him. He's like, oh, can you? If you've got the cash, you'll mix it. He's like, well, no, I'm only going to mix stuff that I think is any good.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that, and I think the idea that if you've got some songs, just put it out there.
Yeah,
get it out there on Spotify. Get it out there on Bandcamp. You know, it might get picked, especially with the way that playlisting and stuff like that. You can end up on a playlist and, you know, half a million plays on a playlist. If it gets picked up by a playlist and put somewhere into something with high rotation, you know, you can sort of gain traffic with yourself that way. I know that's something that Doug from Hamina was talking about. One of their songs on a previous record got picked up and ended up doing 500,000 plays on one of these prog metal playlists.
Yeah, so
that's definitely the new way to go.
It goes to show it, doesn't it?
So, as we discussed earlier on, we were going to talk about Haken's new album, Virus. That has been delayed for a month, so we are going to talk about another album that was released a couple of days ago as we're recording this. This is the new Frost EP, Others. Now, we'll start off with this by saying, how familiar are you with Frost music?
Reasonably familiar. So I discovered these guys back in 2006 when they released Million Town. And I loved this album. It was so good. I just really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. And then when they released, I think the next one, which was Experiments in Mass Appeal, it was okay. It wasn't as good as Million Town, though, for me at the time. Don't forget, like, I was 16 and 18 at this time, right? So back in the bad days of the internet, we were all jumping on forums and looking for new music. So, you know, really, really interesting that that was it. And then they broke up, right?
Yeah,
they had a hiatus for, like, 8 years or something.
Yep. And they split up for a while, yeah.
So that's when I sort of I'm reasonably familiar, but it's not like I listen to them daily. The question is, why do you ask?
The reason why I ask is because literally this is the first thing I've heard from Frost ever. This is just one of those bands, kind of like IQ. It's a band that I probably should have listened to a long time ago, but just for some reason or another, it just has never crossed my radar. So I will definitely be going back to the Frost back catalog now and going from there and going back and listening to some of the stuff. And they had a, you know, at one point, up until very recently, Craig Blondell was playing with them. They had John Jowett, who's a phenomenal bass player, who has played with Tim Bonus, IQ. He's played on, he played with Arena as well, I think. He's played a lot of recordings in England. So this band is very much a super group.
Yeah, I need to go back and listen to the others, because I've got a sneaking suspicion that I will probably love Experiments in Mass Appeal more now than I did then, and probably more than Million Town, but I'm not sure. I just remember Million Town having, like, probably the greatest, well, not the greatest, but at the time it was a fantastic album cover art as well. It was like a public phone box, you know, the red ones you find in England, amidst like this blue background. It was really cool. I just remember it being awesome.
Maybe you could assign yourself that record as homework and you can report back next time around and tell us what you think of it.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. But I think you need to assign me something anyway, but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes, we are. Anyway, let's go track by track on this record. So
I was about to say, let's dive in.
Yep.
Fathers, first one. What did you think?
Well, this is a great mix of keyboards and guitars in the opening. Before we move into a very heavily processed vocal track, I love the groove of this song. Kind of reminds me of something cinematic in a strange sort of way. I'm not sure how, but it just does. What about you, Dave?
I mean, there's some incredible synths and guitars in this particular opening. And the affected vocal you're talking about lends a certain drive to it when everything cuts away. And also then when the drums and everything come back in, it's got this beautiful driving sort of motion to it. I get what you mean about it being cinematic too. It's sort of like it reminds me of an opening track to something like DayZ or something like that. Like you could hear it in the background of sort of like a semi-apocalyptic movie or something like that. For me, though, the first track sounds like a really good version of the Rogue Traders before Nat Bass ruined them.
So, the one thing actually, it caught me off guard when in the middle of the song it just kind of stops.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I thought,
oh, what the, like, I was listening to this on Spotify and I thought, oh, here we go. Spotify decided to throw an ad in the middle of the song again just for funsies. Mm-hmm. But no, and then it just sort of moved into a, sort of like a, I don't know what it, the sound is. It's like a, I don't know the name of the things, but when you buy it, you can see them in like, you know, in like shops in touristy places where you, he's got like a little xylophone wheel thing and you spin the wheel and it plays Wagner or the Beatles or something. Sounded like one of those. Stops, plays that a little bit, and then just comes back into it again.
Yeah, I think it kind of caught me off guard as well a little bit. It really shows, especially if you go back and listen to their back catalogue, how far they've come as musos and how much they're willing to, sort of the risks they're willing to take. It's a risky move to stop a song dead in the middle of it. You know, so interesting. I'm not sure I agree with the choice, but it's interesting nonetheless.
It is, it is.
So, but the second track, I think, Clouder, what did you think of the start of that? It starts a lot quieter, right?
It does. And it's like, it seems to me, and this is the non-musician here amongst the two of us talking, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like there's like a looped section going on behind, with the vocals much more front and center behind a loop going on.
Yeah, it sounds like that. It does sound like that. I know what you mean.
And then when
and then when
the actual drums kick in, it's very, very interesting. I'm assuming it's actual drums. Maybe it is some a more electronic drum sort of sound being processed, but it's quite offbeat. It's not quite where you think it should be. And the combination of the keyboard sounds and the contrast between the loud and the quiet on this song is very, very impressive. It's very, very well orchestrated. It was really enjoyable to listen to that.
Yeah, I think you can take exactly what you just said there, very well orchestrated, and apply it to the entire album.
Yeah,
it is extremely well orchestrated. I mean, for this, for me, I mean, it's very 80s. You know, when the instruments come in, it's a real, I just immediately think of like Vice City kind of 80s sort of stuff. It's awesome. I love it. And that sort of chip tune kind of lead synth as well works really well. I'm not normally a huge fan of those monophonic kind of synths, but it sounds brilliant. It sounds absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And then we move forward into Exhibit A, which is the song we spoke about on the last show. Mm-hmm. Listening to it again, I thought it very much sounded like a Fat of the Land era Prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the sort of song I imagine would be received very well live. I can imagine just like in a, like I almost imagine this band was sort of playing like a small club. If they play live, would be in a sort of small club, and everyone would just really be into it like that.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder it was the lead-off single for the record.
Yeah,
like if you're gonna pick a song for a lead-off single, it'd be this one.
Mm.
And then we get to the keyboard solo in the middle of the song, and holy shit, what a keyboard solo!
Yeah. I'm not sure whether or not that was programmed or whether or not it was played. It's very hard to tell with keyboards these days, especially if they're programmed really well. But yeah, it's a good solo. It's damn good, real, real good. It's funny that you said Prodigy because I heard Pendulum.
Okay.
Without that. You know, that drum beat that the Pendulum does, that.
Yep. I know the one you're talking about.
You hear it and it's like, ooh, is this the Prodigy? Oh, there's the drum beat. It's Pendulum. So, you know, they use it in every song. Even they do a Prodigy remix. I can't remember what song it is they do, but they use the drum beat in that as well. And it's like, oh, come on, guys. But it's interesting that you said Prodigy because I heard the Pendulum influence in there as well. So. But a very, very cool track. And I agree with you, definitely lead off single material.
Absolutely. So we move to Fathom. Now, this one's a real big change of pace. You got the big, powerful, big energy song of Exhibit A, and then you got a big change. Much more introspective. I really wanted to have a look at the lyrics for this song because I was thinking, well, there's something here that I wanted to read and try to understand. But I cannot, for love or money, at time of recording, find anywhere that the lyrics are written down. And I could not find the shop. I could not find anywhere that will actually sell me the record physically to have in my hands today. So I'll have to come back to that one at some point later and have a read of those lyrics and understand what they're talking about. But I just got this more introspective, I don't know, kind of a melancholic vibe to it. That's just what it gave to me. I don't know whether the lyrics actually reflect that, but it's something that we're going to have to come back to at some point later.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely do a follow-up with that one. I think the melancholic vibe that you're hearing is probably due to the strings. And the strings really make this song. I agree with you. Massive change of pace too. From the powerful Exhibit A, you know, driving stuff that was going as the go off song. You know, this one's much more the stand there and listen to what he's talking about song. You know, it really shows the breadth of these guys' musical ability as well, because it's not just, you know, 11 out of 10 the whole way through. It's a really, really nice change of pace.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that really does show the sort of maybe the different influences or the different sort of attribute of the musicians in the band. It's not all, like you said, 10 tenths, 100% go, 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 as some bands tend to do. There's change of the pace and different vibes and that sort of thing, which is really, really, it's nice to hear. Especially when you've got a talented musical cast of players on the record like this one does. So we move on to the next song, Eat. Now, this one, I love the bit that struck me with this song immediately was the vocal passage at the opening, the sort of call and response, different vocals, and it's panning left and right, doing very different. It's very different. I don't think I've heard anyone do that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was listening to this record with my wife, and she said that this song right here is 1,000 times better than any of the electro bullshit that Stephen Wilson has come up with, which I think is something that you said last week when we were talking about Exhibit A.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's nice that you blamed your missus for this one. it's very early Thompson. I don't know if you know who Thompson is.
I do not know who Thompson is. So, please explain.
Okay, so when I discovered Thompson, he was a 16-year-old kid from California putting out electro music from his bedroom. And he was better than 95% of the shit that was around.
Damn.
Now, unfortunately, he's gone more into the poppy side of things, but his early works were unbelievable movements and chord structures that were just wouldn't go where you thought it would go, right?
Okay.
Unbelievable, really cool
stuff.
You'll
have to link me to some of this stuff, actually.
Yeah, I'll link you to some of his stuff, and we'll put it in the show notes as well. There's one particular song I'm thinking of called Motley Crue that's just, wow, it's amazing. So I got a bit of a vibe of that in this as well. So, yeah, but it's a huge song. It's just a massive, massive, massive song. Moving on, though, Drown.
Yeah, I mean, this one I think is the perfect closer to an EP like this.
Mm-hmm.
The use of the electronics to create a really beautiful soundscape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You've probably got more to say about the electronica things than I do on this one. I'm only just really starting to get into this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So take it from here, Dave.
So the previous one reminded me a bit of Thompson. This one actually was a bit reminiscent of Muse.
You're talking like late era Muse when they sort of put away the guitars and started doing more electronica kind of stuff, which is pretty much when I stopped listening to Muse.
Kind of, but I think there's just something about the inherent, there's some stuff in there that I just sort of went, oh, that sounds a bit Bellamy-ish. And that staccato, there's a staccato piano organ thing throughout the whole track almost that reminded me of Won't Get Fooled Again. But it is a gorgeous track. It's my favorite track on this album, because it is very, I feel it's very understated, but there is a lot going on. It's kind of like a duck, you know, sitting on the water. It looks really calm and underneath it's going for life. I don't quite know what else to say about it other than, you know, go and listen to it and be interesting to hear what other people think of it. But it very much ties in, I think, that first track as well, in that it sounds like sort of the ending of a movie. You know what I mean? Like if you put this whole thing out and listen to it, it kind of sounds like a journey.
Yeah.
You know, and that the final one very much sounds like the end of the journey.
Interesting to see if that journey is also reflected in the lyrics. I mean, I was trying to sort of pick out snippets of the lyrics, but when I'm listening to a record, especially one like this, I like to sit down with a lyric sheet and read the lyrics along with the record. Didn't have that available to me when I was doing this one, unfortunately, because we had such a late switch to talk about this record. because the Haken one was only postponed 2 days ago as we're recording this. So I didn't have the opportunity to kind of like look at the lyrics and really sort of do a bit more of a deeper dive on those.
Mm-hmm.
Be interesting to see if the like the musical journey, those in the actual instrumentation, reflects that in the lyrics as well, if the two sort of mirror this sort of a journey.
That's
a good point. We should, we might have to come back to this one again at some point in a bit of a follow-up and have a bit more of a discussion about this, I think.
No, I agree with you. I think it's probably one that we need to come back and do a little bit of follow-up on once we've got lyrics in our hands and things like that. And but I mean, overall, great album, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a fantastic, fantastic record. It's so fresh and modern sounding. I mean, people think of prog and they think of stuff that kind of, oh, here we go. They're just kind of, you know, there's influences from other bands and, you know, it's sort of, here we go. Here's the Genesis sound or something like that. But this is so fresh and modern. And how the hell does that come out of like, you know, I mean, the guys in this band have been around for quite a long, they've made a lot of music and made a lot of records and they've come up with something so fresh and modern sounding now in the late, now I think this was recorded a little bit earlier than this year, but talking like, you know, now in this era, how can they come up with something so fresh and modern?
Because they're not Stephen Wilson.
Like,
I mean,
oh man, we have taken the long handle to Stephen Wilson so much on this podcast. No, I don't think he's ever gonna. I don't know if we're gonna reach out to his management and ask you to come on the show. I don't think he'll do it. I think he's just gonna say, no, I heard you what you guys said about me. Fuck off.
Yeah, but he would have said that anyway. I think the reality is that when you've worked on so much music over so much time, you can appreciate so many different things. And no matter, I'll give you an example, right? So, my band, actually, we hit the studio next weekend to start rehearsals for my new band. And I play very much influence from Dream Theater, Tool, all the stuff that you would think, Porcupine Tree, all the stuff that you would think a prog head should listen to, right? But there's a lot of stuff that I do in string skipping and things like that, where I actually use techniques from my country days. So like chicken picking kind of stuff and double stops and things like that, which you don't generally find in a lot of that music. So it's no matter what you do, all of those influences do eventually wind up in the melting pot. And I think this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. I remember Mike Portnoy talking about something like this, and everyone assumes that Mike Portnoy listens to like metal and only metal or only prog rock and stuff, but he doesn't. He listens to everything from like Elton John to U2 and things like that. I've also heard Jordan Ruder say something similar about that as well. People assume that he listens to like metal and he doesn't really listen to a lot of metal. He listens to everything, classical music, electronic music. I know he's mentioned he's been a bit of like a fan of Aphex Twin and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the wide and varying influences of a musician, some of which are not immediately obvious, definitely do come into these sorts of things.
I think that's the difference between a musician and someone who plays music.
Yeah.
Genuinely, I do. Or a music lover, a musician, and someone who plays music. You know, people who play in a band, they play music and things like that. They do the whole, I've got a friend of mine who does that, you know, oh, this is mad, listen to this. It's like, it's exactly the same shit you were listening to 5 years ago, mate. You know, I get it. You like it. I understand that. But branch out. You will find other stuff. And that's the whole reason why I've been doing this playlist this year.
Yeah.
Because I want to find stuff that, and there's been shit in there that I've gone, like the thematic. I would have never discovered the thematic if it weren't for that.
No, not at all.
There's great musicians out there, there's great music out there, but you need to open your mind to do that. And it will influence you and your love of music and your appreciation for music as well. Like next to us, where I live here in Sydney, there's a Colombian family that live next to us. And every couple of weeks they'll have people over and they'll have their Colombian music playing and everything like that. And, you know, some people would get the shits with that. They'd be like, oh, bloody Colombian music, you know, it's the same fucking shit over and over and over again. It's like, have you listened to mainstream Western radio of late?
Yeah, totally.
You know, so, but it enables me to sort of sit there and actually appreciate it. And I don't mind it. I don't mind listening to stuff that's a bit sort of offbeat and so on and so forth. My recording professor when I was at uni said to me once, he said, you should listen to every single piece of music you can, because either it'll be inconsequential or it'll be so bad that nothing will be as bad as that again, or it'll be so good that nothing will be as good as that again. There's only three options, right, when you look at it. And I thought it was
that's profound.
The word I'm looking for.
I would add a fourth one to that. Or it'll make you think about something you haven't thought about before. True. Either by the that's a different musical style, or something lyrically that is said, or whatever. I think this is a good point actually to mention here on this show that after we're done recording this podcast, we're actually going to be featuring on another podcast.
Yeah, first
where
one.
We've spoken at length about the podcast Australian Hunger. I mean, Ben, who does his podcast, is ostensibly an interview show where he interviews musicians from mostly here in Australia, but around the world. His tend to be more in the heavier end of things. I've heard him interview guys in like death metal bands and tech death, that real, really, really heavy stuff, way heavier than anything that either Dave or I listen to or even talk about here on this show. We've been a fan of each other's work for quite some time, so now we're going to do a podcast together. So we're probably going to end up talking about many of the same things that what we've just spoken about here in the last 5-10 minutes on that podcast. Don't know when it's coming out yet, but when it does, we'll let you know.
Absolutely. And take a deep dive. Have a listen to the things that we want to say if you want to hear us drone on more about music. it'd be great. And that's actually a really good segue for me to say, and if you do want to hear us drone on more about music and music-related things, you should check out our Patreon, because we have one of those, and we have an additional show that goes up sort of every week, or every fortnight, I should say, where we discuss more stuff that we just couldn't quite fit into the episode. So you should check that out.
Absolutely.
So overall for me, I think it's a big thumbs up. You should definitely listen to this album. It may not be for everyone, but it is definitely one that you should listen to. Hoggy, what do you think?
Absolutely. You've pretty much hit it out of the park what I was going to say. It's an excellent record. It's definitely a very different from the sort of thing that I tend to listen to. You are a fan of and tend to listen to quite a bit more electronica or electronica influenced music than I do.
Yep.
So this could be another sort of window into that world for me. Eventually one day I'll get into that sort of, I'll get into the music. And this might be the way in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that brings us to our album review. Now, Hoggy, I gave you an album last week to have a last time. I gave you an album last time to listen to called Black Rain by a band called Fish on Friday. What did you think?
I thought it was a really, really cool record. Definitely one I'm going to seek out and try and buy somehow. It was available on Bandcamp, but then just before we started recording the last episode, that link disappeared. So I'm going to have to find somewhere to buy this album. Very inspired by the sort of modern English prog rock sound. I can hear bits of Anathema, bits of Big Big Train, Life Signs, that sort of stuff. Given that this is like Nick Beggs is part of this band and he has been a big player in that scene. He's played with Steve Hackett. He's been playing with Stephen Wilson for a long time. Played with Life Signs as well for a while. So I can see where those influences come from. This is a very, very good record. Definitely one I'm going to have to go back and check out. Now, the album that I gave you was actually one that was recommended to me, which I passed on to you from my wife, which was Simon Phillips' Protocol. What did you think of this?
Okay. Dear sweet Jesus, the 80s is strong with this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of 80s sort of stuff. I mean, this record was what, 1988 or something, I think?
Yeah, 88, 89, somewhere around there. I mean, it's a very 80s album. It was sensational. Absolutely brilliant, but for fuck's sake, it needs lyrics.
Yeah.
Without them, it kind of sounds like an 80s movie soundtrack, you know, something like a buddy cop film. I can
like Lethal Weapon or, I don't know, what was the name of that one that Arnold Schwarzenegger did? I know that wasn't an 80s movie, but it was like he played like a cop in a movie a movie within a movie sort of thing. What was it called? Oh, Last Action Hero?
Last Action Hero. Yeah.
Sounds something like from the movie within the movie to that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of what. I mean, I love the use of panning instruments. There was some really creative use of that sort of stuff. The overall album itself is fantastic. It was cool that they had the alternate versions of a couple of songs on there as well.
Yeah, that was like because the Spotify does like generally when you have the Spotify, you have like the reissued ones, so you get the extra tracks from that. You never get original studio recordings on Spotify. It's always the remastered one.
Always. Mm. I will say that so the last three songs were a bit meh. I love drum solos as much as the next person, but to put three of them on an album which total like 10 minutes of my playtime,
it's a Simon Phillips record from the 1980s. You got to put a drum solo on there.
I know, I understand that, but one, not three. Right, it's kind of like that Monty Python skit, you know. I want the painting with 12 disciples and one Christ, one. You know,
It reminds me of the joke. You know, it was like the drum. You know, there was a joke about this is the people, and it was like the drums are going on and on and on. And it was like, what happens when the drum stops? When the drum stops, bass solo.
Yeah.
I forget the rest of the joke, but I do remember the punchline.
I think that's enough. Look, definitely worth a listen. It is interesting that Protocol, there's actually Protocol 1, 2, 3, and 4 from what I could see.
Yep.
So I might go and have a listen to the other ones and see if they're any different. But yeah, I mean, definitely worthwhile having a bit of a listen to.
Okay. So what have you got for me this week, Dave?
For you, I have got a band by the name of Agora, or I think that's how you say it, Agora. Now, these guys are from South America somewhere. I'm not quite sure. Mostly because their bio is entirely in, I think, Spanish.
I've got some real-time follow-up here for you, Dave. They're actually from Mexico.
Oh, they're Mexican. Okay.
They're Mexicans.
Now, they cite some pretty interesting names here in this bio, which I can't read because it's in Spanish. But there are some things I can read in here, like Judas Priest, Guns N' Roses, Megadeth, Sons of Apollo, Dream Theater, Billy Idol, Alice Cooper. Pretty cool stuff in here. So the album was released like a week ago, and it's called Imperio, and the link is in the show notes. You can check it out. What have you got for me?
So I have an album for you by William Duval, who is now the lead singer and guitar player for Alice in Chains. He did a solo record last year called One Alone.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very different record because it is literally the only two things that are featured on this record are his voice and one acoustic guitar. That's it.
Okay.
So it's a very interesting record, and I'd like you to have a listen to it.
Okay. I will absolutely do it. Are they all originals or are they
covers? All original songs. There are no covers, no reinterpretations of Alice in Chains songs at all. It's all him, all his music.
Sweet. That sounds awesome. Excellent. All right. Well, I will definitely give that one a bit of a listen.
Absolutely. I think that about wraps it up for this week's episode.
It does indeed. Now, if you would like to find the show notes for this particular episode, you can find them at the 98podcast.fireside.fm/55. You can contact us via that website, whether that be on our Twitter, you can find us on Facebook, or you can contact us via email. Our Twitter handle is at 98fm, and our email is contact.dtfcanz@gmail.com. Now, next time, Hoggy, what are we going to be talking about?
Next time around, we will be going track by track on Ebon Ivory's The Long Dream Eye. This record has only just been released in the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it on all the big streaming platforms. You can pre-order it from their website. Go and check that record out. We will be coming back next fortnight with that album, track by track.
Excellent. Until such times, unless of course you're a Patreon user and you're about to join us for our amazing after show, my name is David Ellis.
And my name is Alex Hogg, and we shall see you all next time.
See you then.